This is episode 3, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Hey, Eco Warriors, welcome to episode 3 of Trash Talking. This is Barba, your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, a company working to repurpose waste into beauty products and get you to rethink what you're throwing in the trash. Thank you for joining me today for these inspiring interviews as we talk with female Eco Warriors from around the world and learn about their journeys and their tips for living a more sustainable lifestyle. If you enjoy this podcast, we would really appreciate you taking the time to subscribe, rate, and share this podcast on iTunes. Your 5-star ratings mean that others can discover these great stories and help spur more Eco Warriors to action. Today's episode features Sharon Rowe. Sharon is the founder and CEO of EcoBags Products, the first U.S. business to make reusable grocery bags a thing. Sharon started her journey in the late 80s when she decided to do something about the wastefulness of plastic bags. She sold 1,000 bags at her first Earth Day festival and was featured on Oprah. A former actress, Sharon is in the process of publishing her first book, The Magic of Tiny Business. As a registered B Corporation, Sharon has built a lifestyle business that also makes the world a greener place. She estimates that over 8.5 million bags have been sold since 1999. Statistically speaking, according to ConserveNow, a plastic bag is used for only about 12 minutes. If Sharon estimates that her eco bags last for about 10 years, it means that Sharon's business has diverted 2.65 trillion plastic bags from use. She's also married and has kids. Sharon shares so many poignant points about building a business and is a prime example of someone who found a solution for a problem that was bothering her, plastic waste, and turned it into a thriving business. She shares a lot of tips for entrepreneurs who are looking to build an intentional business, and I learned so much from talking with her. And I think you will too. Now, let's get trash talking.
My name is Sharon Rowe, and I'm the CEO and founder of EcoBags Products. Well, Sharon, tell us about how you started EcoBags, because you have quite an interesting journey of how you started this company.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because I just gave a presentation the other day for the book that I'm writing to the publishers, and someone asked me, how did you know when to start? How did you know your product would take off? And I was like, well, I didn't. I started about 30 years ago in New York. I was living what I call upstate Manhattan in Washington Heights. I had a couple of things going on. First of all, I was just really put off by all the plastic bags that were floating around on the street. They would just rip right away. They gave you really cheap plastic bags at all the stores, not just groceries. And I thought, this is really wasteful. And at the same time, I needed to get a job. I had a job, but I was an actor. I was working in New York, and it wasn't really pulling in the kind of income I needed. And I had a regular job, but that was going to take up way too much time because I just had a baby. So I needed to find a way to make a living, and I decided I wanted to do something where I would feel connected to what I was doing. And I thought, oh, I can get rid of this plastic trash, because I had come back from Europe years earlier where I was traveling, and I said, they use reusable bags. They just bring their own bags to the store. Why don't I try that here? So I started talking about it with a few friends. I couldn't find any in the United States. There were a few canvas bags I found, but mostly there weren't any. They were the wrong size. They were like these mini ones that people use, you know, for book totes for the library and stuff. So there really wasn't anything I could bring to market right away to test my idea. And lucky for me, some friends came over for dinner and they said, oh, well, actually, we're going to France next week. And I said, oh, can you bring me back these? And I told them what I wanted, which was the French filet bags. And they said, sure. So they brought them back. And I said, okay, I'm going to start using these. And that's basically where I got the idea to start the business, because I started using the bags instead of taking plastic. And other people in the shops were like, that's interesting. I mean, not everybody, but there was enough curiosity around it. I thought, oh, this, if I'm feeling this way, I'm not the only person who's feeling like this, maybe just to catch on. And so I said, oh, I'm going to start a business about this. So Ben and I sat down in the kitchen and said, well, sort of, what should we call it? And he said, Eco Bags. I have to say, he's a songwriter, and that's the first time Eco and Bags had been put together. So we were sort of the front end of that. We didn't know anything about branding and trademark, but we knew enough to call it something that would be catchy. And then, you know, once you start doing something, you actually find a lot of signs to what you're doing. You know, yes signs and no signs. And soon thereafter, I guess, I got wind of Earth Day Fair in New York City. It was probably about 6 months later. And this is after I'd already gone up and down Columbus Avenue, knocked on doors and said, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think? So I wasn't really selling. I was testing the idea. So I found out about this Earth Day Fair. And so I registered for it. I found inventory to sell, which meant faxing all different consulates all over Europe. I couldn't make it in the U.S. I couldn't buy it and resell it. So I found a place to get it from so I could import and resell. And so I did that, and I set up a table at this Earth Day Fair, and I think I sold through like 1,000 bags in 4 hours or whatever amount it was a good amount, enough for me to say, interesting. This is interesting.
Yeah, okay, but this is the thing you have to explain, Sharon. What year was it that you started?
Oh, 1989, 30 right. years ago, 1989. Nobody was talking about this. I'm telling you, in the time that I've been doing this, the conversations around bring your own bag, plastic trash in the ocean, single-use plastic bag bans and laws, all of that has come up in the time since I started. And actually, we participated in two of the original laws, one in Ireland and one in England.
Wow.
By participating, we had product, and they were doing the laws, and we were in contact with them. And again, this is also before social media, you know, so we're just dealing with faxes here, faxes and phone calls.
What year was that?
The ban in probably 5 or 6 years after I started, maybe 10 years. Yeah. And then things didn't really, really, really shift in America until Oprah Show, I would say. And that was 17 years after I started.
Wow.
But there were a lot of rumblings before that. I mean, Oprah basically took it to the masses with that show, and that was at the same time or year, more or less, that Al Gore was talking about, you know, we need to pay attention to this hockey stick called climate change.
Seems like you're really at the forefront of the conversation, and that you've had a lot of experience seeing how things have changed.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's for sure, because I've been around for a long time. But also, information sharing. I mean, when we first started, I would actually present the idea of reusable bags. Even plastic bags are reusable up to a point, I guess. But a cloth bag is, by virtue of its design, reusable, right? But nobody had really thought of that, and we took it into the natural products industry. I just feel like so much innovation has come and has now impacted popular culture. You know, think about organics 30 years ago. This was not a conversation. You know, and living healthier has, first it started with the me, which is my body, what goes into my body, and now it's finally expanding to what goes into the environment.
Yeah, no, that's so cool that you've been able to see that progress happen.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about one of the questions that comes up a lot when people are building an eco business, especially one where it isn't maybe what people see as a sustainable model for business.
Right.
They're always concerned about, oh, but what's the profitability of your business? Because you're creating something that people can reuse. It's not something they have to constantly rebuy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's a challenge. I was once in a business meeting, and they said, if you can't fit, pay or pull it out. Pick another product. Because, you know, everybody's always focused on more replacement products, you know, toothpaste, whatever, right? But there's a world of durable goods out there. Think bedding, right? How many times do you buy a bed? Think couches. Think curtains. You know, things that are like one-time purchases, either every 10, 20, 30 years, or a lifetime, whatever. So if you're going into a durable goods business, something that can be used again and again and again, you can't just think, look at your shopper, your customer as someone who's going to come back to you again and again and again for themselves. So you have to reframe it. You have to go really wide. You have to reach more people. So you have to have a wider base in multiple categories if you're going to, you know, generate profitability. And then you also have to think, okay, they don't just buy this for themselves. They purchase it for friends and family. And potentially friends and family and business associates, and or if they're in an organization where they might use what you have for a promotional aspect, I'm talking about bags right now, so you sort of have to, you have to break it out differently. That's all. Because you're not just hitting, you know, one person for a repeat business in the same way as you are with an ongoing, replaceable consumer good. And that's where you find your profit. And you also have to price it correctly so that you can maintain really good cash flow, so that you can grow your inventory, so that you can widen your base and have the goods that you need to sell.
So how did you learn about all these things?
Oh, trial and error. Trial and error. I made every mistake on the planet. Although I have to say, we were fairly lucky because we grew really slowly, and we grew using our own financial resources, which weren't a lot. I mean, I started, I think, with $1,000 or $2,000. I actually can't remember, but that was it. I mean, it's not like there was more money behind it. Again, 1989, so you have to sort of translate what that would mean in today's dollars. I think I looked it up at $10,000, but I'm not sure, so to check that. I also borrowed on credit cards to establish my credit for at least the first 3 or 4 years. Back then, the credit cards were 0%, and you could do cash balances, so I flipped credit cards. And what I did with that is I maintained a healthy grouping of credit cards, probably anywhere between 8 and 10. And I would move money back and forth, and I would keep a spreadsheet on it, and I would make sure that I always had enough money to pay off any credit card. So it wasn't like I was leaning out on it 100%. I was building my own cash as I was borrowing. So if the rates ever changed, I could immediately pay it down and not get trapped with, you know, the high interest rates. And that's actually something I recommend. I mean, not everybody says that, but I mean, I save money while I'm taking it out of the credit line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it took me a long time to figure that out, but I did figure it out. And then I never used those credit cards for anything except cash, not even purchases.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very, very structured. So I chose to just live on less and really work with, you know, putting the money back into the business.
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like you know a lot about the business aspects, and I know that you had written this book about building tiny businesses.
Yeah, I call it the magic of tiny business. You don't have to go big. Well, the magic is just that you get really clear on what matters to you, and then you build a business to fit your life. Now, that doesn't mean need to be small, you know, saying it's tiny. I mean, small just conjures up you're just sitting there knitting, you know, booties or you know, doing graphic design all by yourself. By tiny, I mean really intentional. And sometimes you can do it by working backwards. I wasn't that smart, but now if I were to tutor someone on a business, I'd say, what kind of income do you want per year? Do you want to be the only one doing it, or you do imagine yourself having a team? What does that mean? You know, paint the financial picture and then back into it and look at it.
Wow, that's really smart.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, stick to what matters to you. So what mattered most to me was that I wasn't going to kill myself working this. I was going to start at a certain time during the day. I was going to end 5 or 5:30. You know, I would work normal working hours every single day. And I would, you know, take a lot of vacations because I'm taking the time for self-care is what they call it now.
When did you kind of figure this all out for yourself? Like, how old were you when you kind of figured this out and where you are now?
Okay, well, when I started, I was 32. I figured it out as I went along. And I have been an actor, so I already knew how to live in New York and be rejected. I didn't like that. And I also knew how to live in New York and work really, really hard to try to get jobs, like on commercials for products I didn't really care about.
Right.
So it was a slow growth. And my expectations were that I kept myself healthy and happy, I'd be fine, and that it would all work out. Now, it doesn't mean that I always felt optimistic. There's several times I quit my business and said, oh, I can't do this anymore because it was just going too slow, or I got stuck in a hole or something like that. So I didn't really have any mentors. I just really made it all up. But eventually, when you get to my age, you're like, oh, I did it. That's kind of what the book's about, is kind of unraveling it and seeing that I made a lot of conscious decisions along the way. Now that they seem to me as conscious decisions, then they were just, okay, what's next, what's next? But when you're on the pulse of something, you can feel it. You know, I knew when it was time for me to really take the message more mass market, and that's right around the time that QVC said, sure, we want you on the show, and we sold through instantly. And Oprah, you know, 24 hours before we went on, because we pitched it, said, sure. And the product went on her first Go Green show.
Wow.
You know, if we pitched it the year before, maybe not. But we just kind of knew. By the time Oprah came, it was
the internet was there. But before that, it was just talking to people, real social media.
Where did you find those resources? Where did you find these places to, like, pursue these ideas? Like, I feel like we have the opposite problem now. Now we have too much information out there, and the issue is shifting through all of it. You know, before, your issue was, where do I find people and how do I get information out? Now the issue is, how do I sort through all of this, like, nonsense information online and get to the core of what I need, and how do I reach my correct audience?
Yeah, good question. I think it has to come from you, and you have to know what you really love. It might be as simple as making a list saying, these are the things that make me happy and connected. And then in terms of products, it's like, what's missing? You find those little places, those niche markets.
How did you connect with people, and how did you find these opportunities to, like, kind of promote your business? And I see you're doing the same thing with your book now.
Yeah, I would talk to everybody I met. Doesn't matter if it's at a business conference or it's in line at the grocery store. It doesn't matter. You know, I would just say, hey, you know, I'm working on this thing. What do you think about it? I mean, in the very beginning for the product, I literally would walk into retail stores and I'd say, hi, you got a minute? And I'd pitch them an idea and I'd say, what do you think? And I'd talk to them. And I wouldn't sell them because I had nothing to sell at that point, right? I was like a journalist. I just wanted to know, what did they think? And or did they share the same frustration as I did? So if we have an experience, someone else is having that exact same experience.
I know that you mentioned a little bit about, like, struggling at some points and, like, quitting your business, which I know is something that I think all small business owners have kind of, like, experienced at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone working on a project. But how did you get through those moments?
Well, I have one time I always point to because it's kind of funny. I was really frustrated with the business, and I said, I'm going to go get a job. And I actually, you know, put on the outfit, the shoes, did my hair, I did the whole thing. And I walked out the door, and I went to the place, and it wasn't really that well researched. It was just a place I found that said hiring. And I walked into the office, and I walked into the building, and it was too cold, and the windows were all closed, and it smelled antiseptic, and I went upstairs, and they said, okay, here, can you fill this out? And I sat down. By the time I sat down and saw other people waiting, I was like, I'm out of here. I can't do this. My heart was, like, beating. It was a fate worse than death to work in an office with, you know, windows closed.
Yeah.
Too. I worked in, you know, I worked in a really cool office for a startup in the way back, and I worked at 60 Minutes, like, a million years ago. Like, that's sort of a job I just fell into. But I just couldn't do it. And another time I actually quit. I didn't quit. I took a part-time job just to get me away from my own business. I was mostly working alone, even though I had a lot of people working with me. They weren't working with me in a space. They were working with me. So I did a friend's credit card processing for their jazz club. I mean, it was, and this was before you could swipe things. I would have to enter numbers. And I was like, and I would be sitting in a tiny little office that wasn't really much more than a closet. And I was like, you know, I'm done. I can't do this either.
I think it's so great, Sarah. You have an interesting, like, career path.
Yeah, no, because it's hard. You're alone. Nobody really knows what you're doing. You kind of feel like, oh, how am I going to get this bigger? You don't want to take on, I didn't want to take on more overhead. I didn't want that pressure, right? Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, it's all the same. So that's why, again, that goes back to the book. It's tiny business is very intentional. There's that core element of a business that you can scale, and you get to decide if you want to scale it. And then you get all the benefits. The magic is you get all the benefits of having something that you call the shots on. Now, I'm not saying you call all the shots. You call about 80%, I figure. Sometimes it's not even 80%. I mean, sometimes it all goes to shit. And you just have to go, oh, well, what am I going to do? I can't control the whole thing.
Right. When you're dealing with all these difficulties and dealing with scaling the business up, like, what was the most important thing for you? What was your North Star? What kept you in line while you're building the business?
Well, my North Star was twofold. My North Star for the business was creating a product that really would solve this problem in a way that was sustainable. So I don't know how I knew, but I knew how to do that. I kind of don't know how to say that, but we always had, like, a clean supply chain. We always wanted product that was made responsibly. I always made it a priority to have fair wage and fair labor. And then for my own self, with my young family at that point and then growing, was I wanted time. Time matters more than money, but money still matters. I mean, I think a lot of people say time matters and then they don't look at the financial equation, but I live in Metro New York. I have to look at that.
And where did you get your drive and your motivation? Because it sounds like you have a lot of it. And I know that you said that you kind of hustled while you're working as an actress in New York City. But where did that stem from to begin with?
Well, that I point to my parents. My father was a shop owner, People say, oh, he had a business. He didn't have a business. He had a store, a single store that he worked in, you know, with the Army-Navy store pre-Gap and pre-Mall, too. And then both my sisters are innovators and entrepreneurs. So I have two sisters. One's 8 years younger and one's 4 years younger. So I think we just got that sense of doing it your own way from my dad and my mom, who really encouraged three young girls, you know, growing up in the 70s and then into the 80s for my younger sister, that you want to be financially smart and you want to have something you can do your own so that you can have your own path. You don't want to rely on, you can be in partnership with someone, but you don't want to have to rely on that person. You want your own path. You want to have your own resources. Now, my mom didn't. I mean, my mom only worked part-time after I left for college. And I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. So I was in my 40s, you know, it just took that long. I didn't actually really care about owning a house. It's like, whatever. So, I mean, again, in terms of priorities, time was my thing. I didn't want the responsibilities and the costs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Where did you end up going to study?
Oh, I studied theater. I studied theater at a college where there were no requirements except towards your major. So I had a great time.
That's awesome.
And I went and I studied at a very progressive school, still progressive, Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. Very politically progressive and it's a good school, a really good school actually. And I still have friends from there.
Nice.
It was a liberal arts college where you really learned how to think and write, which I think is the basis, you know, writing and math.
What's one of the biggest wins that you've had, like, during your career, like, during building this business? Like, what's the biggest win or, like, the most rewarding moment that you've had?
Yeah, I've had a lot of rewarding moments. Probably recently, I mean, in addition to the fact that, you know, the Oprah, the spots we got, and the, I mean, we were in Time Magazine, Glamour, blah, blah, blah. Which all great, but they came to me. I think two things recently really kind of sparked me, which was one was I was invited to speak at Yale, budding entrepreneurs in the sustainable space. And I love that because I had auditioned at Yale and was rejected. So it was like for me a go homecoming. I had auditioned for the theater department millions of years ago. But another thing was I was at a social venture network event. I forget the guy's name, but this is a natural marketing institute, and they do quantitative analysis of behavioral changes in consumers. And I think it was the second, or I believe it was the second most adopted practice. They call it habit, but I like to swap it up for practice, is bringing your own bag to the store. I think it was right behind turning the water off when you brush your teeth.
Wow.
So that was like, yeah, my friend Rose Yee looked over at me and winked. To know that we were at the very beginning of that and we were a seminal part of that movement. And we know that we inspired thousands and thousands of people because we went into that natural product institute right when it was growing and we had all those customers, independents and Whole Foods and so on. And all those bags went into all those hands, and all those hands used them. And on that tag, it said EcoBags. And also on that tag, it said fair wage and fair labor and what it was made with, organic, recycled, or regular cotton. And we know that it got used. And we also know we saw the influx of, you know, non-cotton bags, like the non-woven bags. And we now see, now we're seeing articles, you know, on how important it is in terms of branding on bags. And we're seeing people not only use them for the purpose, but also for the connection to the brand that's on the bag. So there's a drive and there's an interest in supporting an overall healthier environment, which includes more than just what goes in your mouth. What goes in your mouth, what goes on your body, what goes in your body, what goes on in your world, you know, all of that.
Yeah, it sounds like you get really inspired by, like, being able to lead change. Is there anything else that, like, particularly inspires you?
Yeah. And we sort of, we're not, you know, waving any flags, saying, I did it, because it really was, I mean, we may have been at the beginning, but a lot of good companies out there that are doing the right thing, and they're doing well by doing good. I mean, I'm part of this whole community of B Corp. Are you familiar with B Corporation?
Yeah, but you can explain to people who don't know what a B Corporation
is. Oh, okay. So a B Corporation is basically a codification of the things we'd already been doing, and even more, because they really banded what it means. Companies that are really committed to a triple bottom line, not only in their practices, but in their corporate structure if they are held by shareholders. We're actually not. We're independently owned, but we still have it in our documents. And it's a commitment to people, planet, and profit. So instead of just the old model, which is a commitment to profit for shareholder, I mean, that's your fiduciary responsibility as a corporation, right? It's return of shareholder value. It's saying, as part of your mission and your documents, your legal structure, yeah, we're going to create profit, but we're not going to, here's some more peas, put in peril the planet. So we're not going to pollute to create profit. And pollution,
right.
pollution touches a social and environmental condition.
Yeah, and I want to get more into the core of this because it seems that you really like nature and you really love the planet. Where did you get your... Where did you get your love of nature and the planet and sustainability and things that are all eco-friendly?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I just sort of figured that out over the weekend. I was like, where did this all come from? Like, I really love clean air and clean water. I mean, who would say I don't love clean air and clean water? I trace it to my roots and in Connecticut, actually, growing up just in a suburban neighborhood where we had free rein. I mean, in the olden days, you know, as a kid, I was in high school. I graduated in 75. We just went out and played in the woods, in fields. You know, we just hung out. We were always outside. And I went to a YMCA camp when I was a young girl. And, you know, at age, gosh, I don't remember how old I was, maybe 8, I swam across the lake. I canoed. I kayaked. You know, this wasn't a fancy pants camp. It was just like the basic, you know, Y camp. But I just really fell in love with being outside. And I'm a swimmer, so I love swimming across large bodies of water.
For sure.
That's my thing. I like open water swimming. And I did it this summer in Maine with a wetsuit. Oh, my God, it was cold.
Wetsuit
mattered. It was great. The water was like 64 degrees. It was chilly. I just swam a couple days ago in Northern California in Tomales Bay. That was chilly, too.
I was going to say, that's probably about the same temperature.
It's probably about the same temperature, exactly. And I did not have a wetsuit. So I didn't stand in it. My ears were hurting. Spending time outside, and I think, you know, I think, what do they say, the best things in life are free?
Mm-hmm.
They're not really free,
yeah.
But we have parks and outdoor spaces, and I'm a big advocate of protecting outdoor spaces. I think, you know, privatizing them and doing what the current administration wants to do is just insanity. You know, climbing, I was in Yosemite a couple of years ago, we went to the top of Half Dome, you know, that's where I find renewal.
Amazing.
Yeah, I should come up so we can go kayaking on the river.
That's so cool. And it sounds like you get a lot of your own time to yourself. Like, how have you managed to get to this point? Like, what did you have to put in place?
Oh, I always did it, though. I never, that's the thing, that's the magic of tiny business. I always scheduled what they call it now, called self-care or work-life balance into my schedule. I made going for a walk or going for a swim a business meeting, a non-negotiable business meeting. It wasn't like, oh, I'll finish this proposal and then I'll go for a swim. It's more like, no, 2 o'clock, I'm going for a swim.
Do you have any tips for people who might be like kind of starting out their career or like a bit younger and they're working for someone else and they're having difficulties finding that work-life balance?
I would say, don't quit your day job right away unless you are the kind of person who really can, you know, you run with that kind of risk. Because you don't want to, I mean, when I started, I didn't have financial resources, but I had a lot of support. And we knew we could live, we created a budget, so we knew exactly what we could live on. It was very little. I knew the minimum. So if you set up your bumpers and you know the minimum, you can decide when you can either leave the job, the current job you're doing, or find time to start building that next thing so that you can ramp over. And I would say I start talking to everybody you know about what you're thinking. Instead of listening with a yes-no response, just listen to the responses. Don't try to send the responses to fit what you think you want to do. You know, really, really listen and look for opportunities and to give yourself a, excuse me, time period for that. Maybe say this month I'm going to blah, 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 make 20 contacts, collect the data, look at the data, talk to people. I would talk to people personally face to face. I think you get more intelligence when you're working with people face to face than when you're just posting things online and getting those kinds of responses
because maybe just because I know myself, sometimes I'll get into something online, but I'm not really as invested as if I'm sitting in front of someone.
Right.
Coffee doesn't cost that much, right? Take people out to coffee. In my book, I say, you know, you've got people all around you who are filled with intelligence. Ask them questions. Say, hey, can I have 3 minutes of your time, 5 minutes of your time? And don't waste their time. Ask them questions that are important to you. You know, even if it's, how many hours a week do you work? Or do you love what you're doing?
Amazing. Yeah, that's a great tip. What are your 3 tips for people who want to live a more eco-conscious or sustainable lifestyle?
I mean, to bring your own bag to the store, for sure. And don't buy, part of bringing your own bag to the store is don't take and limit the use of all single-use plastic. How's that? So that's bags, straws, cups, you name it. Don't buy an apple wrapped in plastic. Don't buy cauliflower wrapped in plastic. Exercise. You know, don't work yourself to the bone. Get outside, walk around, move around, swim, whatever you need to do. Take time off every day, at least an hour minimum, to do something that rejuvenates you, but in a in an open way, meaning, you know, if you're going to go for a run, don't just plug into a news source or even music. Just be. So, you know, let go of all those inputs. So that would be for rest and relaxation. The next thing would be just drink a lot of water. Good water. And don't buy water, though, for God's sake. You know, if you're in New York, drink clean New York water. There's a lot of money that goes into making sure that water's clean. Because, you know, you are, after all, a vital system. And if you don't keep your system vital, you know, what's that going to be about?
Awesome.
You have to, you know, you have to take care of yourself. So eat well, eat, sleep, and drink well. And don't be so hard on yourself. I'm giving you 4. Things take time. I have a friend of mine who said anytime he has a new idea or a new initiative, it takes at least 18 months to get it off the ground. Nothing happens right away. Yeah, nothing happens right away. And mostly because once you think you're going to be working alone and you think you're going to be independent, you're really going to be interdependent.
And what do you mean by that?
You're going to rely on so many people to get you information, to talk to them, to set up meetings, to, you know, anything you're going to discuss is going to take more than, you know, not just like you're sitting there and say, hey, let's do this now. Like, yeah, right. No, nothing happens right away. I used to think it did, but it doesn't.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, this is so great, Sharon. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome very much.
I love that Sharon is such a dynamic person who has figured out a way to build a thriving business from next to nothing and balance her personal life too. Her business is the real deal, and I highly recommend you check them out and ban single-use plastic bags from your life. You can find her and her products at www.ecobags.com. Also, if you're a female entrepreneur looking to build a business around your life, consider reading Sharon's book, The Magic of Tiny Business. It's available for pre-order now on Amazon. Tune in next time, Eco Warriors. Stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at TrashyBeautyCo.